TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Yes, it is. Another edition of Raised by Wolves. Danny Cunningham and Dane Moore with you today as we record this on Tuesday, April 9th. Everyone these days talking about their NBA awards ballots on their podcast, Dane. So we're not going to do that. We're going to talk about the playoff picture that's upcoming. Playoffs start this weekend on Saturday. Obviously, the Minnesota Timberwolves not going to be involved in it this year like they were last year. But that doesn't mean there aren't plenty of interesting things going on. The bottom of the East is still yet to be settled. The eight teams in the West have been settled. The order still not quite sorted out. But it's going to be a fun playoffs, I think.
I think so, too. I'm ready for it all to be kind of like shaken out. I was thinking, do we know any matchups yet for sure? And you and I were actually just talking about this. It's like it doesn't feel like there's ever been a time where just watching a random NBA game feels less meaningless.
Yeah, like March and early April games are just, this is the time if you want to ease off of watching NBA basketball. Now is the time.
Save up. Get ready.
Yes,
get ready
if you
to
need
lock
to take
in
a little bit of a mental break, March and early April is the time to do it, because a lot of the really good teams either, one, are not doing things that they're going to do in the playoffs because they don't want to show everything, or two, in their bigger games, they're really not doing it. They're playing very vanilla defenses. They're not doing a lot of the more intricate things offensively that we'll see when the playoffs come and the games really matter. Because at the end of the day, momentum leading into the playoffs is a myth. It doesn't matter. And a lot of the times, the race for the last playoff spots aren't really good basketball. Like, I'm not intrigued by the Detroit-Charlotte-Miami race for eighth place in the East. I really don't care about it.
Come on, Danny. I mean,
you don't either.
I'm just kidding. No, what I was going to say was, like, I'd rather go back. If I knew it was going to be, like, Portland versus Oklahoma City, I'd like to maybe go back and watch one of those games. I mean, remember there was that awesome overtime game? It was, like, on TNT between Portland and OKC.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather go back and watch one of those than watch Charlotte play, like, Cleveland or something.
It just doesn't do anything for me. So if there is a time to ease off the basketball binging and just give yourself a couple nights where maybe you don't watch two NBA games, or maybe you want to take the week off from watching basketball for the most part, now is the time of year to do that. Because
I'm not doing that, though. Can't.
I'm not all the way ramping off, but I'm not watching the...
Well, we can't because we have to watch these Wolves.
Yes. We have to watch the Wolves every night still, and they have their final home game tonight, final game tomorrow against Denver. But my league pass consumption hasn't been as high over the past 3 weeks. I'm not watching two games a night, no matter what.
Same. Yeah, it's just... Well, particularly with the teams who are, it's actually, other than the Wolves, pretty much it feels like every team has mailed it in. Maybe not Memphis so much, but I just, even if I'm not watching, I check the box scores and it's like, what? There shouldn't be players getting 30 minutes that I've never heard of.
A lot of it becomes, who are these guys?
Right.
A lot of it, and they're not household NBA names. You see a lot of guys that have been shut down for the year due to injury and so on like that. But there are some interesting things that are going to happen.
Yeah.
So I want to dive into those because I think the Western Conference playoffs as a whole are very interesting. And I think that the top four teams in the Eastern Conference and really from the second round on in the East should be very interesting.
So is there a matchup you're most looking for in the East there? Like
in the East, I just want the second round to get here. I think that whoever Brooklyn matches up with in the first round will be fun. I really like what Brooklyn does, and it's really awesome to see how they've built. And I know you and I were talking about this on the train to the station earlier, just what Sean Marks has done. And he won't win Executive of the Year, not to dive into awards talk, but the way that they've built without having their own draft pick since 2013 and just the little moves that they've done that have really paid off. I think it's really cool to see them in the playoffs. I think that whoever they're going to face in the first round, Brooklyn likely is not winning that series, but I think it'll be a fun series.
Yeah, the East is... It's the second round where it's intriguing. Whereas the West, if you're picking and choosing your games, I think even in the first round, a lot of the Western series, regardless of how they shake out, will be intriguing. I think even if it's San Antonio down there towards the bottom, like a San Antonio Denver series, I'm not just like certain the Nuggets are going to roll over
exactly.
And win that. You know,
here's the thing in the West. I think that there are two teams we can look at in the West and say they're going to be in the second round. I think you can say that about Golden State. They've earned that. There's no way that whoever is eighth is beating Golden State four times in 2 weeks.
And the Clippers. I'm just kidding.
Yes, exactly. And the Rockets.
I agree.
I don't think that the Rockets are losing in the first round, no matter who they draw, because it won't be Golden State. But other than that, I can see any of the other six teams winning or losing in the first round. And that's what's really exciting and interesting to me. Denver's probably going to be the two seed. I have no idea if they're going to win or lose in the first round.
So I think the team that everyone talks about you wouldn't want to face if you're one of those top teams is Oklahoma City. And you and I got the chance to watch them up close in person the other day and just kind of have been tracking that team of late. And it's like, okay, scary. You have PG and Russ. And so, you know, if you do the Bill Simmons sort of thing where you're like, okay, who has the best player in the series? Mm-hmm. Like, even if it's against Denver, you go, PG and Russ are the two best players in that series. They're interesting, but they are not attractive to me at this point at all.
I think Paul George's shoulder injury has hurt them more than a lot of people want to admit.
You want to hear a wild stat?
They haven't been the same since the All-Star break.
So that's it, All-Star break. So in the first quarter since the All-Star break, and this is from a couple games ago, but it still sticks. Their starting lineup's net rating in the first quarter is -25.4.
And then they came here to Minneapolis and scored 38 points on the Wolves in the first quarter.
They might have got a little
I believe they were up 12-2 at one point. So
but it was close. It was like 38-36. I don't know. But that is astounding.
Yeah.
It's astounding. I mean, it's Russ and PG.
Considering you have a guy that has an MVP trophy, you have another guy that will probably finish in the top five of the vote this year. And then you've got Steven Adams, who granted hasn't had a great year, but he's still Steven Adams. Yeah, he's still a good basketball player.
Well, you just look at the playoffs take a team like Milwaukee, who they've played a lot of people. They're playing, like Giannis is playing like 31, 32 minutes a night. You look at their starters and you go, they're going to be able to ramp up. They're going to be able to play more, like 6-8 more minutes a night.
Sure.
They're going to, because everyone relies heavily on their starters. I look at Oklahoma City and they're, all they have is their starters, really. And I don't think it's something really to lean on for them. I mean, yes, I could see them, you know, popping off in the playoffs. And, like, it's Russ and PG. I get that.
You can't count them out.
You can't. But I just still am. I do not buy into that's the team I would least want to face. I know, and I kind of do agree with you that the momentum thing is a little overrated. But they're playing bad.
For a month now. Also, you can look at, and I realize that maybe we look at the momentum thing as being overrated because of who the teams that have won the title in the past have been. You've got Golden State, who they know they're more talented than everyone else, and LeBron-led teams, and that's just a different animal. Because I think last year entering the playoffs, Golden State was like 7-10 in their last 17 games of the season, which not quite as bad as OKC's been, but not good either. And the Cavs, when LeBron was there, just were historically never good. In March and April, they just did not care. And then those teams were able to flip a switch. And I don't think that Oklahoma City necessarily has that ability.
Right.
But I don't think that just because they're playing not very good right now means that they're counted out.
No, I'm not counting them out. I'm just...
And I think...
I don't know.
I think part of the reason that we say, oh, we wouldn't want to play them is because of who they could be matched up with. There's a chance they're matched up with Denver, and I'm not comfortable picking Denver to win that series. I'm not saying Denver can't or won't, but I'm not necessarily 100% comfortable putting all my eggs and going, Denver's winning that series. Denver's beating them four times.
Isn't that just like Denver, though? Like the way that the roster's put together?
It is, but the roster hasn't been here. And to an extent, that does matter in the playoffs.
So that's another like common narrative that I don't think I disagree with, but I do wonder if we're overhyping that to some extent.
Sure.
Like, I don't know. That team's been awesome all year. Like, are we gonna demerit them that much because Jokic hasn't been there before? Like, we're not talking about like going to the finals. We're talking about the first round here.
Yeah.
Like, yes, maybe they can't make a deep playoff run and go to the NBA finals. But I think no matter who Denver plays, like, the expectation should be pretty much the table pound that you just made that they're going to make it because they're going to finish the season with like 55 wins.
Yeah.
And that means you're really, really good. Like,
and they are really, really good. But I don't know how big that gap is.
Yeah.
Where it's, oh, we're really, really, I don't know if it's necessarily the same gap that we will typically see between a 2-7 matchup. And like, in those matchups, there's normally a considerable margin of talent and there's an expectation that it's very rare the two seed's not going to win. I'm not sure that exists with Denver and the teams that could finish seventh.
I just think it leaves for one of those opportunities where it's three games into the series where it's Denver, San Antonio, and all of a sudden Denver's up 3-0 and we're like, oh, well, why did we question that? Like, I could totally see us doing
possible.
That after the case. I don't know. We'll learn a lot about Denver in the first two games of that series. When they'll be at home playing whoever, if they can come out and like punch and knock those two off, I'll be like, all right, let's peel that back a little
bit. I think we can learn a lot about Denver the first game of their first playoff series, especially if it's a close one in the fourth quarter when things really tighten up. I think that's when you learn a lot about a team. And I think that that's a possibility for Denver. I really do.
Do you remember how it was, and I would need to go and look for this season, but with Jokic last year, his fourth quarter numbers were bad.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, you know, obviously line that up to conditioning and stuff. Being how important he is, and when we talk about the ramping up to 40 minutes a night for, you know, most stars, like,
sure,
that'll kind of be interesting with him, right? Obviously, he's in better shape this year, but
which
like,
still isn't. I mean, he's not like LeBron type shape that we've seen LeBron get into for the playoffs. Like, he's never going to be that. That's not who he is, and that's okay.
Well, and there's an element of like they've been trying really hard all year too, which is like not LeBron. You know,
we've seen that hurt teams in the past. Right. How many teams have we seen that have tried really, really hard to get to a certain number of wins, and because of that happening, they don't accomplish all their goals?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you can point at Golden State when they won 73 games.
I think about that Dallas team who lost to mm-hmm. Golden State in the first round.
The We Believe Warriors. You can look at Atlanta, the team that won 60 games back in 2015.
I feel like now I'm totally talking out of both sides of my mouth because I'm like, yeah, Denver, like they're good.
But I mean,
compared it to a 1-8 upset.
There are points to be made on both sides.
Right. No, it's going to be for pretty much like the first two games of pretty much every series. Because when we go to the East too, I'm going to be like, where's Philly at? Like, are you here? Did you show up for these first two games?
Yeah.
Did you take care of business against like the stinking Pistons or Nets? Like,
or
losing
Magic.
One, you know, something like that. Like, all these teams, particularly if you have your sights on going to an NBA championship, it's like, get your stuff done early in the first round. Don't mess around and drag out the Spurs or the Pistons or somebody to a 6-7 game series. Like, don't do that, because you know who's not going to be doing that is the Warriors.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Bucks will be doing that either.
Like, probably not.
I feel like to contend for a conference championship, you're going to need to roll through the first round. I think that's going to be huge.
And that's what it's been for the most part. The Warriors haven't had first round trouble. I don't think they've had a first round series that's gone past five games throughout their run.
You remember the Celtics used to do that, though? It was like every year they go like six or seven in the first.
They did it last year. Last year they went seven games against the Bucks.
Yeah.
They could not win inside the Bradley Center.
I was thinking like the KG Celtics at first.
The team that won the title, I think.
Didn't they go with played, seven
they
to the
played
Bulls?
Seven games every series. Because they played seven games in the first round. The second round, I think, was against the Cavs, and that was when LeBron had 45 in game seven and Paul Pierce had like 40. Then the conference finals, I forget who they played, but that one went 7-2, and then it was seven against the Lakers.
Right.
Like, they played 28 playoff games, which is the most you can possibly play. You can't go higher than that. The series don't go longer than seven games. But you don't see that now.
On the other side of it, if you're a lower seed trying to pull off an upset, like that is that's the goal, push somebody to 6 or 7, maybe win the series. Which team would you most like to see that from, East or West?
I would like to see the Clippers not be in the 8 seed and have to face Golden State.
Yeah.
Because I think that the Clippers not having a star and playing the right way, and I think that it's a credit to Doc Rivers, what he's done, and you've been higher on the Clippers throughout the season than I have been, and credit to you for that. Exactly. Pump your fist
pump.
There. Yeah. I would love to see them have a real shot at an upset. And I'm sorry, facing the Warriors in the first round is not a real shot at an upset. I would like to see them get a legitimate chance in a series. So I think that'd be a ton of fun.
What about the East?
The East, I'm really interested to see how Boston comes out, because Boston's been a team that I realize it's not an upset, but they've been in kind of disarray for most of the season.
Would you be more upset if the Pacers knocked off the Celtics in the first round than you were when Duke lost before the Final Four?
I wouldn't be more upset. I would not be more upset. I don't think it's likely. I wouldn't be more upset because I was at the Final Four. That's the only reason I cared about Duke losing, was because I was at the Final Four and I wanted it to be more exciting. I wanted Zion to be there because I was in the building.
Okay.
If I weren't in the building, I would not have cared one iota about any college basketball games in the tournament.
You're not going to be at whatever Indiana's field house.
No, I won't be at Bankers. I won't be at Bankers Life Fieldhouse for the second round between the Bucks and the Pacers. If that so does happen.
So those are my favorite things. Are like weird, gritty teams pulling off upsets in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Boston last year.
Yes. Like, I would absolutely love the Pacers to knock off the Celtics. Mm-hmm. And just because I think that team's, or like, and I know the Clippers, they probably got to get up a little bit more, but I'm the same way there too, where I'm like, I wish they were.
Yeah.
Like,
although, would that turn into Boston in the second round? Let's say Boston beats Indiana. Can they turn into that gritty underdog against the Bucks?
Because the Bucks are they went to the conference finals,
but they're a 60-win team, and they're only good.
The
Boston Celtics are only good when they can play the nobody believes in us card. When they're the favorites, they're terrible. But when but when they can play the no one believes in us, no one thinks we can do this. When they're good, and that's when it happens in the second round.
The thing is people will pick Boston in that series.
Sure.
You know?
Some picked them last year, and they still got to play that card because there were enough people that didn't think they could happen. I was one of them. I picked the Bucks to win that series over them.
Assume Boston does beat Indiana, and I do think that's more likely than not. I'll pick that. Like, how many people do pick? Like, what percentage of people do pick Boston over Milwaukee, even though Milwaukee will have home court?
I would say 30%, 35%. I don't think it's. It's not
which is
nothing.
Pretty big for a which is big for a four seed.
I mean, we saw the four seed sweep the one seed last year in the East.
We did?
Yeah, the Cavs swept Toronto. Toronto won 50.
The Cavs don't count.
How do they not count? They were the four seed.
They were the one seed. No, the Cavs were the one seed.
The Cavs were not the one seed.
In my mind, they were the one seed. They don't. Boston, that's different. Well, I guess the Cavs were really bad at defense, but
the Cavs were bad at a lot of things.
They were bad at a lot of things.
The Cavs were terrible, but had LeBron and Jeff Green sometimes.
Boston does not, and I know everyone likes to Kyrie and all that, and his who he can be in the playoffs, and obviously he has some pedigree there. But they are a team that is a sum of their parts.
Yeah,
and what we've learned this year is the sum of those parts is the puzzle pieces don't. Fit together.
Correct.
They haven't for 82 games.
At least not when Gordon Hayward doesn't look like Gordon Hayward. On the very few nights when he looks like Gordon Hayward, they're good. On the majority of the nights where he doesn't, they're not a very good team.
That could happen though, right?
It absolutely could happen. He could find another level in the playoffs and they could roll through Indiana and they could take Milwaukee to 6 or 7 and possibly win that series. That's a very real possibility. I don't know how strong it is, but it's a possibility.
Where are we at on that Hayward is right now being physical versus mental?
I think it's a lot of both.
Yeah, I do.
I think
too.
That next year he'll be very good again next year. I think that this injury was always going to take time. Just because it happened early in last season doesn't mean that it wasn't going to take a really long time. That's a tough injury. Not to act like I'm some medical expert here, but I played football in college, and my roommate had the exact same injury. He dislocated his foot, broke his tibia or fibula or whatever bone cracked at the bottom, had the exact same injury, and he couldn't play. And football and basketball are obviously a little bit different.
No, it's interesting.
But it was an 18-month injury. Like, it is a long road to recovery, and I realize that the Boston Celtics probably have a little bit better of a medical staff than Lake Erie College did. But it's still an injury that takes quite a bit of time before you're back to normal. And then once you are physically back to normal, there are a lot of mental hurdles that you have to get over. So he's not all the way back yet. Like, I understand that it happened in October of 2017, but that doesn't mean he's 100% right now.
There's just subconscious things, right?
Absolutely, like, yeah.
The way you explode or don't explode. And
whether you realize it or not, you're mentally handicapping yourself a little bit because you're – that fear is always going to be there mm-hmm. in the back of your mind a little bit. Like, I think a big thing for him, just it sounds like a really small, stupid thing because the Cavs were terrible this year, right? They won. They're probably going to finish with 19 wins. But him going back and playing in Cleveland on the same floor that it happened, yeah. I think was something that helped him a little bit. It helped him get past that a little bit. And Spencer Davies from Basketball Insider did a story on Gordon Hayward playing there again and just like kind of the demons that he had to face walking into that building despite no right. LeBron, Kevin Love being hurt, like all those things. And they're facing a really crappy Cavs team. But the fact that under that basket, on that exact spot, right. on that exact floor is where his life changed, that's something he had to get over. And that didn't happen for them until March. Right. Like, that's a thing.
Good thing they don't have to play the Cavs in the playoffs.
I mean, the East still runs through Cleveland, so I don't know how anyone's going to go through the finals. Tristan Thompson said it this preseason, so
right.
with them not in the playoffs, I don't know how this whole thing's going to work. And my whole summer has started. Like, I have counted.
Are you saying we're in summer right now?
No. Okay. We're getting a snowstorm tomorrow.
Okay.
The beginning of my summer officially has been when the Cavs have knocked out the Raptors for the playoffs. And it's not going to happen. I don't think summer's ever going to come, Dane.
Raptors, we're going to get to see in person tonight at Target Center.
I'm curious how much we're going to get to see in person.
Right.
I know everyone is playing, but and I know by the time you're listening to this, the game might have already happened, so this might be pointless. But I'm curious.
No, I'm just, like,
I'm
more
just curious how much
who
we
Toronto
see.
Is. Yeah. Like, as a team, and at least. Me personally, I end up probably watching 2/3 Western Conference games versus Eastern Conference games.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, just naturally with the Wolves. And they're a question mark for me. And like in a good way.
Yeah.
Like it's a question. Like I don't totally believe in them, but it's because there's some unknown that like if you remove that question mark, I think they could be like scary.
Yeah, I do too.
And I'm interested to, in person, see who. I mean, I've seen Marc Gasol play in person a million times, and every single time, you know, obviously it's been with Memphis, but that he is very interesting to me. And we were talking about this on another podcast, and I don't know, is Marc Gasol an 82 game player? Or is Marc Gasol a 16 game player?
I don't think we know.
Yeah, right?
Like, I don't think we have that information right now.
Like, he was a stud. He was a stud, whatever, like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
When, you know, the Grizzlies were good. But, so then that year he was a 16 game player. But what is he now?
Yeah.
Is he able to every single night have an impact on the game?
And can he be a 16 game player in the role he's in?
Yeah.
Because the role he's in Toronto is different than the one he was in Memphis. He's... The load on his shoulders was much bigger when he was a member of the Grizzlies as compared to what it is as a member of the Raptors. And in speaking right. with that 16-game player, I'm curious what we see from Kawhi in the playoffs because it's very clear Kawhi has not been – the effort level from Kawhi has not needed to have been there every night. Like, well, he's playing his 60th game of the season tonight in the Raptors' final game of the year.
I'm not concerned about it. I was going to go with Lowry.
Curious.
Like, I think Kawhi is a 16-game player.
I do, too. And I'm curious just how much of an improvement from the regular season we see in him. That's what I'm curious. I'm not curious if he can do it. I know he can do it.
Yeah.
I'm curious how high he can get.
Right.
That's where my question mark with him is. It's not will he be good, it's how good will he be.
I guess I have the questions and I'm assuming like superstar Kawhi in the playoffs.
I am too, but I don't know. It's been a while since we've seen superstar Kawhi. We saw very good.
2 years?
That's a while in the NBA.
Yeah, but he's like 26.
But it's still a long time. Yeah. I mean, 2 years ago was.
He's been a superstar this year, though.
But not the same as playoff Kawhi. And I'm excited to see.
If it's there.
If he gets back to that level. And I hope that he does because I think it's better for the playoffs if he does.
Just to me, the more swing variables are what is Gasol? And then, I mean, Lowry's been like a minus 16 game player. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that.
And I'm curious how much of that was DeRozan, too.
Yeah. Could those things be tied together? Like,
and
I don't know.
No matter what anyone's going to say, I have a firm belief that there was a huge mental block when LeBron James showed up.
Yeah.
And LeBron James is not walking through that door this year. And I think that that alone makes them better in the playoffs because mm-hmm. they were a damn good basketball team last year. They didn't win 59 games for nothing. Right. Like, they were a very, very good basketball team on both ends of the floor. And LeBron James walked into Scotiabank Arena or whatever it's called now and said, sorry, you guys are done here. And that was that. Like, when Jonas Valanciunas could not make those layups at the end of game one of the Eastern Conference semis last year, you knew that that series was over right then.
Were they layups or were they, like, tips?
Tips, tip-ins. But yeah. Still, like, he had three attempts at the rim.
Yeah.
And when those didn't go down, you're like, there's no way this Raptors team went. And then they got smoked in game two. LeBron hit a buzzer beater in game three, and then they lost by 35 in game four, and DeMar got ejected for a flagrant two.
Right.
Like, so you just knew that once one thing went wrong and LeBron was involved in it,
right,
it was over. Because how long have the Raptors have an issue with game ones? They lost, like, seven consecutive game ones in series or something like that.
Until they
finally beat the Wizards, and then they lost game two.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if, one, they can get over those early series jitters, and two, how much LeBron...
That first punch thing I was talking about, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And how much LeBron just not being involved helps them.
So let's obviously move them along to the second round and Philly to the second round. I mean...
And Milwaukee.
Yeah, no, I'm just looking at that matchup, the Toronto-Philly. It will be in Toronto. Where would you sit on that series? Where are you putting your money? Because that's an interesting one. I mean, like,
it's
Toronto gets a bump
because
they got the home court.
Yes, and that is a very... Both those home courts matter, I think. I think that both of those places are tough places to play in the playoffs. Raptors fans are very good, and Philly is a very tough place to play when it matters too. I think we saw that last year. It was just a difficult place for teams to go. I don't know. That's a really tough pick because Philly's got the talent to
do it.
I'm
so
Philly
jaded.
I don't know about the fit.
I'm so Philly. Like, I do not look at Philly like rationally. Because, like,
why is that?
So like years ago, I was just I found the first stages of the Hinkie process like fascinating.
Yeah, oh, I think the entire Hinkie process is fascinating.
And I used to like weirdly watch a lot of their games on League Pass, like the 10-72 team.
That was me with the Brooklyn Nets the past couple of years.
Okay.
That's why I'm really happy.
It's a weird
the
affliction.
Nets. Yes, incredibly strange. That's why I'm happy the Nets, like, had this turnaround, and it worked, because I'm like, this team's terrible, but I'm, like, kind of fascinated by the little moves they're making and the style of play that they're playing.
So I, like, had that, and I was, you know, I don't, if you want to say, like, favorite teams, like, they'd kind of became, like, one of my favorite teams.
Sure.
And, like, Embiid came back, and he's could this guy be one of the best players in the NBA in a couple of years? And I, like, wrestled with that, and I've always had a fascination with the Sixers, I guess, just to be simple. And then they go and make this Jimmy Butler trade,
mm-hmm,
where obviously I have some unique insight into that whole situation.
Yeah.
And also then for them to have moved on from Covington and Sarge, who were two of my favorite people from
process members. Yeah.
Yeah. And, So I still have like this, like, Philly's always kind of been one of my like East teams, you know?
Yeah.
And then, but I'm just like torn. I'm just kind of like torn on it when I like try and tap into the fan in me of like, who am I cheering for in this series? And, I don't know. Like it'll be one of those things, you know, they say where you got to turn the game on to figure out who you're cheering for.
Yeah.
Or like who you want to win. The game just starts kind of playing out and you're like, I am cheering for the Sixers.
So
like,
you get mad about something. Yeah, right. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, so I think that will be I'm really interested by that series because, and this is like so played out, everyone says it all the time, like Philly has the most talent. They have a ton of talent.
They have the best starting five outside of Oakland, California.
Yeah, I mean it's unbelievable. I mean, I wrote something when the Sixers were coming back to town last week or whenever that was, and I was like, this Wolves team isn't very good, but they're like a, I don't know, like a middling NBA team.
Yeah.
And if you just go down the roster of the Wolves versus the Sixers demolish the Wolves at every position.
Mm-hmm.
And it just from a pure talent standpoint, it's like you go, you're like, all right, we're picking teams for pickup. You're like, that group with all the tall guys and the little white dude who can shoot, like, this team's never, there's no way the Wolves can beat them.
No.
Like, and it's,
and they couldn't.
That doesn't happen. That really doesn't happen that often in the NBA. I mean, Golden State, you have that feeling when you're seeing them play.
They just pass the eye test.
Yeah. And a lot of other good teams don't necessarily do that. You know, I kind of think about Toronto like that, where you're like, obviously I could tell these guys are good, but they don't overwhelm me.
I don't know that Houston does that.
Yeah. Yeah. Houston has like a little bit of it with Harden and his,
well, it's because his,
like,
beard.
Portland. It's because his beard. For sure his beard.
Portland, but, you're right. Portland doesn't do
you're
that.
You're just like, this team seems good, but I'm not.
Denver definitely doesn't.
Yeah.
Denver absolutely does not do that.
Like, they have a guy.
Yeah.
They have a one superstar talent, and then everyone else is like, oh, these guys all play really well together.
But then OKC kind of does do it with
Paul
George and Russ Westbrook.
Yeah,
like,
I put Adams up there, man.
And,
like,
yeah, and Steven Adams too.
Like, I think Steven Adams,
I think he's great. I just think he had a rough year.
So I've been, and it just comes from me not having, like, statistically dug too much into the Thunder. I feel like I've watched them a lot, but
yeah, that's how I feel.
Why do people say Steven Adams is having a down year?
It feels like he hasn't been the same. It feels like he's been maybe a step slow.
Okay.
I think it's been an eye test because I haven't done like some statistical deep dive on him either. But I've felt like he's a bit of he's a little bit slow this year.
My favorite things about Steven Adams is I think he's one of the smartest players in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a really cool thing in getting to watch him in person numerous times. Like you pick up on these little things he's doing. And then he also has this synergy with Russ that they fit.
Yeah.
They fit as well as any two, like, top three players on a team could possibly fit together. So I'm like, I don't know. Like, I like that. I like a lot of that. And I don't, if his numbers are down, so I'm like, I believe in that.
Yeah.
I believe in his intellect and how he fits with the team's most demonstrative, needle-moving player. That it makes me, you know, believe in him a little bit more for the playoffs. I mean, there's no way he's, like, lost a step, like, physically.
No, you hope that he's got another level that he can get to in the playoffs. And if that's the case, then it helps a lot of – it helps Golden State's – or OKC's, excuse me.
Right.
It helps their upset chances. And a big reason for that is – Russ is shooting. That's the other huge question mark for them going into the playoffs is, can he find a way to put the ball in the basket from somewhere other than around the rim?
Isn't it? I know we don't want to talk about awards, but hasn't it been really interesting this season to you when you're reading national writers or listening to them on their podcasts and how much respect Russ has still gotten this year?
Yeah.
Despite dismal statistics. And to me,
we say dismal statistics as he averages a triple double again.
Dismal efficiency numbers.
Yes, a bad shooting percentage.
Which, and I think this is a credit to those people who are saying that, and it's applying both the eye test and the stats. When I think a lot of the times, which kind of a sinkhole we can fall into when we start talking about awards and assessing players is. I didn't get a chance to watch that many Thunder games or something like that. And you're like, you pull up Basketball Reference.
Yeah.
And I think it's encouraging that we're getting smarter, I think, as an industry, if you want to say that, where we can.
Or it's just a basketball society.
Yeah.
Because it's not even an industry. Like, there are people that are not employed by people or not. Just basketball fans.
Absolutely.
Really.
It's like, I've watched Thunder games and I'm like, that guy out there who is faster and, like, stronger than everyone, like, he's helping this team in a way. He is a driving force of what makes them win, even if sometimes his shooting makes them lose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which it's weird. And I just have found that kind of consistently interesting. And it's one of those things where I wonder if this happened 6 years ago, when I think we were in this weird spot analytically where everyone was kind of jumping on it, and you're finding it was becoming more than just John Hollinger, who was, like, consistently writing with numbers in their stuff. And I just wonder, like, would Russell Westbrook make All NBA if it was 2011 versus 2019?
Yeah,
And because it is the national media voting.
There are, I don't think he's a lock to make it.
Yeah.
I think I would vote for him, but I don't know that everyone feels that way. I don't think that he's a lock, in part because the guard position in the NBA right now is really, really good. I mean, James Harden and Steph Curry are locks for first team guard. Damian Lillard's going to be an all NBA guard. Kyrie Irving's probably going to be an all NBA guard. Russ is in the conversation. Kemba Walker's in the conversation. Bradley Beal's in the conversation. Klay Thompson's in the conversation. And I feel like Mike Conley's in the conversation.
See, so personally, and this is what's wrong with the whole thing.
And Donovan Mitchell has to be somewhere near the conversation.
It's just we don't have a definition of like what we're voting on.
Yes.
And
which is fine. I think it's fine.
It's fine. But I guess for me, I do not factor in winning as much because I think
it's a tiebreaker type thing.
Okay. So then for me, it's like I look at what Mike Conley has done, certainly without a Steven Adams and Paul George. I'm like, that is a massively positive impact.
Yeah.
Bradley Beal, massive positive impact on his team. And it's why I would move those guys up or ahead of Russ. I don't think it's weird because I'm talking on both sides of my mouth.
You're just arguing with yourself. I can shut my mic off. Really,
I'm mostly processing my own thoughts out loud here. But it's an interesting thing, and being as it is so impactful for what these players can earn. When we talk about Beal and Kemba. Mm-hmm. It's just stupid to me that we don't have this defined. Like, what are we voting on?
Yeah.
What does best players, what does all NBA mean? I mean, it is, like, you want to talk about the salary cap. It's a huge deal for the salary cap. It's also just a bunch of money that, like, the owners have to pay or not pay.
Yeah.
And obviously, we know this, like, very well with Kat. Mm-hmm. It is going to be something that has a massive effect on the Timberwolves, whether or not he makes all NBA.
Yeah, huge.
Like, from
the Wolves are not the only team in this.
And it's like $6 million in salary a year for Kat. It's also money like that needs to be paid. And then there's also this like mental side of it of like how upset is Kat going to be if he doesn't get it, or if Kemba or Beal, if they don't get it. Like, there's all these factors, and it comes down to the 100 people who are voting on it, and I don't think they're all voting on the same thing.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure on the voters.
It
is a lot of pressure on the voters.
I don't know. Those things will be really interesting to see how they shake out, and I think needs to be something that is adjusted in the next collective bargaining agreement. Like, I'm not trying to take power away from the media. I think it's cool that
I think it's a thing where the players don't trust the owners, and the owners don't trust the players to decide this type of thing.
Yeah.
So who else are you going to trust?
And so you should trust the media. I agree with that. There just should be there's a better system.
I think the media voting thing is kind of the best bad option of a bunch of bad options.
But I mean, again, you talk to Timberwolves fans, as you know, as we interact with on Twitter comment sections, whatever. Like, it's been very frustrating for, you know, an intellectually engaged Timberwolves fan to watch what Kat has done over the past 30 games of this season.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're like, this sucks. I, as someone who cares about the future of this franchise, need to cheer against their best player having a great end of the season.
And against the team winning, period.
And personally, I think it's just like, whatever, just cheer for them to do well and deal with it when you get there.
But lose close games.
Yeah. But it's a conundrum. Yeah. Like, it really is, and it'll be one of those things that are super interesting, like 6 years from now, to go back and look at like what happened with the Hornets, Kemba did get it or didn't get it, or what happened with the Wolves, like what moves weren't they able to make. It will be like, oh man, like so and so wanted to sign here, but the Wolves didn't have $6 million more in cap space. Like,
and then look at who that person is.
The web of all of that.
It'll be fascinating.
Will be fascinating because the NBA is such an individually player-driven league. Like, one move like that, or one prohibitive measure from making an impactful move, is huge.
Yeah,
it's just I don't know. It'll be it'll be interesting to monitor.
Yeah, it absolutely will. I'm very curious. And before we get out of here, there's one more team I want to talk about. Just how much belief do you have in the Milwaukee Bucks in the playoffs?
They are my Eastern Conference champion.
You have them winning the East? I don't.
Were you there when we were talking about that? We were eating dinner in the media room before one of the Wolves games, and I think Britt Robson of The Athletic posed it to all of us, and I think every one of us had a different team out of the East.
Yeah, I picked Toronto prior to the season to win the conference. I don't feel as strongly about it right now as I did back in October. Because the Bucks are good, and I just don't know what I'm going
Butler
to get.
And yes. Harris.
And but I was picking, I had the assumption that Raptors were probably going to be the 2 seed. Yeah. I just thought Boston was going to win 65 right. games.
Yeah.
And it's crazy that Boston's going to have to win like 19 of their last one game to get to the 67 games that Bill Simmons thought they were going to win.
I think my opinion on Boston is some people are going to look silly for having picked them to come out of the East this year in the playoffs, because I think they could lose in the first round. I think they could easily lose in the second round. I think it could like not be close too.
But I also think that they could win the East.
There is
no outcome with them that would surprise me.
Yes, I agree with that.
No outcome. But with the Bucks, I'm not sure I trust them as a playoff team. I'm not sure I trust Budenholzer's defensive system, because they allow a lot of three pointers. They try and funnel the three pointer attempts to guys they want to take them. But when you run into a team that's got shooting, that kills you. That's why those Hawks in Atlanta just got destroyed by the Cavs, because it was LeBron and shooters. Now, granted, there's no LeBron in the conference, and maybe there's not as much shooting in the conference right now. But if you look when they play Philadelphia, look how many three pointers Philly makes, because they'll leave guys like Mike Scott open. Mike Scott's not a great 3-point shooter, but he can hit an open three if you give it to him, and that's their problem.
I just don't think there's a team in the East who super scares me as a 3-point shooting team. If they're playing Houston, or if they're playing Golden State, or like one of the more premier 3-point shooting teams in the league, I would get that more. I actually think that that's been something that's been kind of brilliant.
And part of it is because the rim protection is so good,
yeah,
too. Like Giannis is a very good rim protector, and Brooke Lopez has been as well. But I think Boston's got the guys that can shoot. Jason Tatum hasn't been a great 3-point shooter, but if Gordon Hayward can make three threes, all know Kyrie Irving can hit threes. Yeah. Morris can hit threes. Al Horford can hit threes. That's the team that I think could give them fits as a matchup, because they have the pieces that can be used to beat that system that Milwaukee runs defensively.
Yeah.
That's part of it. But also Chris Middleton could become like the best player in the history of the NBA again, like he did in the first round last year, and they just never lose a game and he never misses a shot. That's entirely possible.
I'm more inclined of that. Just that Milwaukee, I think they have so many different weapons, and I think you're going to almost certainly get a far better Eric Bledsoe in these playoffs.
I don't know you can get a better Eric Bledsoe.
Better than last year's playoff Bledsoe.
You can't get a worse one.
Right. And obviously, Giannis is on a different level this season. I just think they're, in my mind, they're the safest pick.
I think they're the safest, but I'm not picking them. I would not be stunned.
So wait, you are going Toronto? Is that?
I don't know if I'm going Toronto, but I'm not picking Milwaukee. I think Boston beats Milwaukee.
Mm.
I think Boston's going to... Weird things happen around Kyrie Irving, man. Weird things happen with that dude. And it's tough for me to pick against him in a playoff series.
Just remember that those weird things almost always happened around LeBron James.
They did, but even last year, like, Kyrie was just around the team and weird things happened. Until he wasn't there for Game 7 and they lost.
And they started winning.
No, he wasn't there for Game 7 against the Cavs.
At the game.
He was not at the game and they lost.
You're talking about literal proximity.
Yes.
They're my fourth most likely to come out of the East. I would go Milwaukee, and then I would go Philadelphia. Has that talent could really be a needle mover. Toronto and then Boston.
The thing with Philadelphia, I don't have enough of a, and this is where it really complicates things with my pick. I don't have enough of a sample size with their starting lineup and that group of guys playing together to know. So like any pick I make, it's, I don't want to say it's uninformed, but I can make
a little bit of a guess.
Yes, it's kind of an informed guess, but it's a much more of a guess than picking any of the three other teams that could win the East.
Don't we just know that if that starting lineup is healthy, that it's awesome. I mean, like,
we do,
people are like, but we haven't seen it. I'm like, well, once, as soon as we do, it's going to be awesome.
But we don't know the fit well enough. Like, we know that they are the collection of talent there is second to none in the Eastern Conference. We don't know how it works together if that's second to none in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
You talked about being the sum of parts.
Yeah.
We don't know that about Philadelphia right now. It could be the highest ceiling in the East, but mm-hmm. they also probably have the lowest floor of those four teams too.
Yeah. With Milwaukee, they are a sum of their parts team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they have really good depth.
Yes.
Better depth than anyone else does. And I'm pretty confident that we're going to get this Giannis in the playoffs. And it will be interesting to see, particularly the guys who have been injured, Mirotic and Brogdon.
That's a big thing too, is you don't know what they're going to be able to give you in the playoffs.
At least they have a ton of depth, and they found ways to make every single player who, when they're put into a bit role, that swells up to be really good. I mean, even...
except for Dante DiVincenzo.
He's shut down for the year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So don't have to cross that bridge. But it's just like, even like Sterling Brown or like Pat Connaughton, you know, these guys, they come in, DJ Wilson, who have like... every single player who plays for them seems to be a positive impact player.
Yeah.
And I guess it will be interesting to see how much that translates to the playoffs. But I've watched Milwaukee play way too many games this season where they dominate. And
that's fair, because they've got a ton of wins by 10 or more points or 15 or more points or whatever that stat is.
Right.
It's stupid.
And they're kind of like the opposite of that Sixers thing you were just talking about with like not knowing, like,
they're a team that was not affected by injuries until very late. I think that their ideal starting lineup played like 56 games together or something like that, which is bonkers. Like, the just for some context here, the Wolves starting lineup that has played the most number of games together was like 15.
That's terrible.
Yeah, compared to the Bucks, who and I can pull it up, but just the lack of injuries for them. I don't want to say save them, because it didn't, but it made them look, I think, better than a lot of... they didn't have to deal with the big injuries that so many teams had to deal with.
It feels like the Eastern Conference playoffs are going to happen and one of the big players on those four teams is going to get hurt.
I really hope not.
I hope not too, but it's like there's like a lot of guys who are like, hey, you're pretty injury prone, or you've been dinged up like all year, like Kawhi, you've randomly sat out a ton. And it's going to stink if one of those teams... like if Embiid can't play for a series or something and they lose, you'd be like, well, we don't actually know that the Bucks were the best team because they never got a chance to play the Sixers in a 7-game series. Like,
I mean, that's what people said about the Warriors the first year they won the title, because they didn't face a healthy point guard the whole playoff run.
Yeah, I guess like I feel like we like have gotten terrible injury luck recently in the NBA, and I do, for like the sake of competition, hope that every team is who they are, like, is allowed to be themselves in the playoffs and you know, have a shot to pull an upset, to make the run, to do whatever. Like, it just, it's so, like, Portland, this stinks. It's like, well, all right, that's kind of it here. Like, I know they've continued, I'm looking at them, won 8 of their last 10, like, but still, it's just a bummer. Injuries are a bummer in that way, and I don't want that to affect the playoffs.
So Milwaukee's ideal starting lineup is Giannis, Eric Bledsoe, Malcolm Brogdon, Brooke Lopez, Chris Middleton, right?
For you. I'm just kidding. Yes.
They've played, that lineup has started 56 games.
It's a lot.
The lineup for the Minnesota Timberwolves that has started the most games together is Tyus Jones, Josh Okogie, Dario Saric, Karl Towns, and Andrew Wiggins. They've started, guess how many games together?
Oh, so since Tyus came in, 14.
Exactly.
Oh, there we go.
14 games together they've started.
That's, which is so interesting, because the Wolves starting five last year led the league in minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that number was like 70.
Which is kind of surprising because of the time Jimmy Butler missed.
Oh, yeah. So it wouldn't have been that. It was whatever, like, minus Jimmy's 22 games, I think he missed. So mm-hmm. I think it was like 60. So they were, the Wolves were like the Bucks last year from a continuity standpoint. And now that's obviously clearly balanced itself out this year where the injury bug has.
Yeah, they the Wolves have had 22 different starting lineups. The top one, 14 starts. The next one, 13. Then 9, 6, 5, 4, 3, 3, 3, 3, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2. And then a bunch of one-game starting lineups.
That's just terrible.
Yeah, it's kind of the year that it's been for the Wolves.
I know we don't have much more time here, but is there, and we haven't talked about the Wolves at all, is there any one thing that you are looking for in the Wolves here, like at once the offseason starts, like outside of Ryan getting the job or the GM, is there like one thing that could happen that you are like, okay, now we're on the right path?
Winning the draft lottery? Is that an answer? Like, yeah, like they are on a much better path if when Adam Silver or whoever counts down the draft lottery right. cards and it gets to 10 and it skips.
No, that's actually...
Like, that would be a huge thing. If it gets to 10 and instead of the Minnesota Timberwolves coming up as the 10th selection in the draft because it goes from 14 down, the New Orleans Pelicans popped up. That would be an incredible moment for the franchise because then you know it's a fourth pick.
Mm-hmm.
At least it's four.
Yeah.
And then if it climbs higher, like that's a huge win for the franchise. Then you're like, okay, it's almost like a get out of jail free card.
Yeah.
Because you've got some bad contracts and Jeff Teague, who is movable, Andrew Wiggins, who's less movable, and Gorgie, who's more movable than Andrew, but less movable than Jeff.
I know. Yeah.
I should have ordered that differently. Yeah. But it kind of gives you a get out of jail free card, another swing at a top level talent that you otherwise wouldn't have.
Sure.
So that's like if that happens, the outlook of this franchise, I think, is much better than if it doesn't. What
right.
about you?
No, that's on point. Like I was trying to like for my Monday column thing, like what there will be other big questions to answer other than Ryan or the GM. But then I you know, I went through them and I'm like, I don't know if any of these things really like move the needle.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds kind of weird, but for me and what I've been enticed by of late, and I know a lot of people say, probably you would say, like, you know, don't take the bait on what Andrew Wiggins has been of late.
Don't do it.
I'm not totally doing it.
I don't know. It sounds like you're doing it.
I very much accepted the fact that he is going to be on the team next year because, as you just said, it's the hardest contract, one of the hardest contracts in the league to move.
Yes.
So he's going to be back. And if you can have this player, I'm not talking about OKC Wiggins. I'm not talking about what he's been over the past 12 games or whatever, which is not a star.
No.
But if you can just have that.
He's been a serviceable wing.
If you know you can have that going into this offseason, that is an absolute game changer, I think, for the rest of the way of putting the rest of the roster together. Because then you don't have to worry about there not being 3-point shooting around towns because Andrew's a serviceable 3-point shooter. You don't have to worry about, oh man, how do we compensate defensively with Okogie leaving the starting lineup or Covington, you know, because Andrew Wiggins is there. Like if he can be this, people should be excited.
Yeah.
That this, I mean, if he is this last 12 games, Wiggins, the Wolves are definitely a playoff team next year in my mind. Yeah. And that's saying something because the West is no joke and I don't think it's going to get worse. LeBron's going to be.
The Lakers are going to be like, better. But hey, when you get to add Zion to this core too, like it's going to make
a
difference.
Well, let's do both things. That's
yeah,
right.
I imagine both things. The Wolves might win the finals.
Let's win the lottery. At least jump up to the top four and then, you know, and Wiggins like kind of drinks a lot of coffee or something and is locked in.
Energetic.
And
spend some time in the weight room.
We solved it. There we go.
Yeah, there. Hire us as GM.
Yeah, there we go. Great. We're available.
All right, thank you for listening. Another edition of Raised by Wolves. Dane, thank you for joining me. Remember, subscribe, rate, review on iTunes, give us 5 stars, or anywhere you can find your podcast. It's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere else where you may consume your media. Once again, thanks for listening. This has been Raised by Wolves.